Welcome back to Entirely NBA, hosted by Entirely Media. I'm your host, Darion Robinson.
Kyle Murph, what's good?
We got a special guest with us today, Michael Carter Williams. What's going on, bro?
Ain't nothing, bro. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I want to ask you this question. What's the hardest part about being an NBA player?
Definitely the travel. Just, you know, the mental drain, the physical drain that it has on you. You know, being in different time zones, waking up, you know, being tired. The travel, you know, takes a toll on you.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. So how do you actually deal with that? And it's not something you can really take out of it. It's part of the process, right? So, well, not even deal with it. How do you learn to cope or make that something that doesn't weigh on you so heavily?
Just stagger sleep, like, you know, try to sleep, you know, during the plane rides, you know, make sure naps are, you know, essential in the routine. Mm-hmm. That's something that I always did was, you know, try to get a nap before, you know, every game, just to be real scheduled on that, on yeah. my sleep.
Now, during this time, as you have started seeing other opportunities other than basketball, do you still follow that same regimen, that same scheme, that same schedule?
No, I haven't, honestly.
Okay. Honestly, okay.
I just, last year was the first year that, that I didn't play, the first season that I didn't play. So it's been an adjustment period for me. Like, I'm trying to still get adjusted to my daily routines, what that looks like, things I'm doing, you know, off the floor. But I'm starting to feel like, okay, like, I need to go back to, you know, even doing some hoop workouts, like, just, you know, staying active, staying in the game. You know, I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm still trying to figure out what that looks like for me, my daily routine, and, you know, how I can, you know, most benefit as for you know, as a human being for that.
Right. Kind of backpedaling, do you think that like, not having that sleep, did that affect, or that traveling, did that affect your play in the game?
Sometimes, definitely some days I'll go into the game a little, you know, with a little bit more energy than others. You know, you just get tired, you know, though, especially on the back-to-backs. Like, if you play in, you know, LA and then you play Sacramento on a back, that's a short distance. But, yeah, you know, even the longer, you know, distance from Portland to Sacramento, like a back-to-back, you know, waking up on that, you know, second back-to-back. And some seasons, man, we got, like, we had the 12-11-30 game on a back-to-back. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, I think they took them out now, but for sure.
The league, they schedule for that, though, right? They make sure, they don't they put that together, like, making sure you're not going from
you
Cali to
so.
New York?
No, they don't do it like from Cali to New York, but there's other distance. You go on a West Coast trip, you could get a little 3-4 hour flight that, you know, on a back-to-back night where, you know, they should just throw one day in between. Mm-hmm. But they get you sometimes, though.
For sure it does.
For sure.
So, all right, let's jump right into Syracuse, because I want to talk about this part of it. And I've watched, trust me, like, when we set up these interviews, the research that we try to do is pretty immense, right? So I've watched pretty much every interview you did. So some of this I know is going to be like a rerun for you. But I want to obviously do this in a way that provides maybe a different perspective. So when we talk about Syracuse, obviously being the guy up until this point, you know, being behind three other guards, I want to ask you, what the hell kept you from transferring out when you were getting little to no playing time? I know that's frustrating. So why didn't you transfer out?
The honest answer is I knew that the platform, the keys to the car, would be mine the next year.
How'd you know that?
Well, because Deion was going to leave. We knew Deion was going to leave. Scoop was a fifth-year senior, mm-hmm. so he was going to leave, right? So it was going to be me and Brandon. You know, as the you know, and it was up in the air if Brandon was going to leave. So, like, I knew that, you know, but, like, nobody was going to take that spot from me that next year. If I, all the dues that I paid my freshman year of, but there was plenty of times where I threatened to leave, where I was like, I'm out of here. Like, there was plenty of times. But then I'd, you know, you'd always have that little grace period where you sit down and you think about it and you're like, damn, like, if I leave and go somewhere else, then I got to sit out a year. This was back when the transfer, and you couldn't just transfer and play that year. So I'd have to sit out that year and then wait for my junior year. I was like, it just doesn't make sense for me. You know, if I know I'm going to sit here and play here, and I've been working my ass off this whole year, mm-hmm. I've been competing in practice every single day. Every day were wars in practice. Like, there was no reason for, you know, it wasn't a good idea for me to leave. I just thought that, like, the best thing for people. But it was frustrating. It was hard.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to pivot real quick, because we just came off an interview with Jeremy Lamb. And so I want to ask you then, because you said it yourself. You said, I knew I was going to play. Ain't nobody taking that spot from me. That's confidence in its finest. He said that he didn't have that type of confidence. So I want to ask you, when the hell did you know you were the man? When did that confidence come for you?
I think during our, like I said, our practices were wars. During those practices, when I, you know, the days I got the better of Scoop or Brandon or even Deion, I was like, man, like these guys are playing at the next level somewhere. You know, yeah. Deion was definitely getting drafted, right? Like playing ones with him. Like if I can do well and be successful against him and Scoop and Brandon, I was like, okay, then I know I could, you know, be successful at the next level. That's what really kind of opened my eyes. Like, oh yeah, like I can play at the highest level of this game. But yeah, like our first unit was like Scoop, Brandon, Chris Joseph, James Sutherland, and Fab Mello. And our second unit was me, Deion, CJ Fair, Rakeem Christmas, and Bai Musakita. So we had like we had a crazy second unit. Like sometimes it's, you know, second unit would get the better of our first unit, you know, vice versa. So like every day was a war, and I knew that that was getting me ready to play in that next level. So that gave me a lot of confidence.
With that confidence, did you still put the work in that next summer going into your sophomore year, or was it just like,
oh, for sure,
you kind of just knew? Did the coach pull up, come up to you and ask you like, hey, look, here's the keys to the car. You gotta lead us. Is that what they did to you? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like even during the year, like I was the first one to practice, last one to leave. Like I would, like basketball was my outlet, like getting all my frustration out, like playing scrimmages in the practices were like games to me, because like I wouldn't play. I remember Coach Hopkins and I, we got into it, and that's like he was like a big brother figure to me, you know, when I was at Syracuse, and he subbed me out during practice, and I was like, man, you subbing me out during practice, you know I don't play in the game. Like I was going at him because he subbed me out, and like we were like face to face damn near. And actually, he headbutted me on the nose a little bit. I owe him one for that. But so every single day, you know, I try to do my best, and that carried over to the summer for me to, you know, really prepare myself, because everything that I was asking for, everything that I was bitching about, you know, all that was like, okay, now it's your turn. So now I was like, all right, I got to be ready now, because everything I asked for now is on the table for me. Yeah. I got to be ready to go get it.
I like that. So let's fast forward just a little bit there. After 8 double-doubles you had your sophomore year, I think 5 of those were in a row. Almost 12 points. I think it was like 7 assists, 5 rebounds, and then almost damn near 3 steals, which, first of all, that defense aspect has always been a staple in your career. We're going to talk about that. But what was the atmosphere like around campus at Syracuse when you guys made it to the Final Four that year?
It was lit. Like every game, like every game we won in the tournament, like we, you know, when we come back home, like it was exciting, because you guys know Syracuse, they don't have an NBA team, so you know, all of us are like the stars in the city. So every single game, you know, we got immense support from our, you know, from everyone, all our fans, everyone at the school. It was a good time.
So how was that transition after, you know, the tough loss in the Final Four? How was that transition to getting ready for the draft to go into the NBA the next year after you knew you was headed up?
It was a lot. Like, everything just kind of happened so fast. Actually, my house had burnt down during the tournament. And, you know, I probably was going to enter the draft anyway. I had a good tournament. I, you know, did well. But, like, that was the final stamp for me to be like, okay, things are a little rocky in my family. Like, I got, like, there's no turning back. There's no thinking about going back to college. Like, I'm going to the NBA. So I kind of was dealing with a lot, you know, going into the draft. But, you know, I leaned on my family, leaned on my agents, and, you know, going through the pre-draft stuff, working out, adjusting to, you know, the lifestyle. It was a lot. A lot was coming at me at once.
Did you have like a thought process of what number you're going in?
I knew I was going to go lottery. My agent was confident that I was going to go lottery. I was nervous though, because I didn't want to be that guy that, you know, the camera panned to like every time somebody was, you know, didn't get drafted. So I did well in my workouts for teams. I got invited back by a few teams. But it was a good process. It was a cool process. It was a long summer, man. I couldn't wait to be done with it.
Those emotions, especially with their, like a traumatic situation like that with your house, being able to make it there and get to the NBA, like financially help your family, did that take off some pressure or did that just make you want to work even harder to go even further in your career?
Yeah, no, it definitely took off some pressure. You know, I was obviously able to help out financially. My brothers and sisters lost everything. A lot of my stuff was, you know, all my clothes and, you know, material stuff was in at Syracuse, but they lost, you know, kind of all their stuff. So being able to help them out, being able to help my family out, that took a lot of pressure off from me and my family.
Well, good. I'm glad you were able to help with that, because that's a big step for you as a man.
Right.
Now, 76ers in a process here, which has been the staple of that damn city and team for
too long.
For too long. You had lost 26 straight games that year. I mean, obviously you yourself had a lot of usage. Number one, congratulations on that.
Appreciate you.
No problem. You were also hitting that rookie wall. So, I mean, I got to ask, as a man, how did you maintain your professionalism and your play that year?
Man, it was a learning experience for me. Like, I hitting that rookie wall was crazy. I remember, you know, trying to sneak in 10, 15 minute naps on the bus, like before games. Like that was probably the most tired year I've ever experienced in my life. Mm-hmm. But I was grateful for the opportunity just to go out and hoop and be in the NBA. Like I was a kid who, you know, worked my whole life to get to the NBA. So, and I was excited to play against different guys, like, yeah, you know, going against Bron, going against Steph, Westbrook, D Rose, like, you know, playing against the guys that I watched growing up. I'm like, man, like, I finally get to do that. So there was some excitement there. And then all the other stuff that, you know, happened, you know, losing 26 games straight.
That's wild.
Having new teammates every other game, like, that was hard to deal with. As a competitor, that was hard. You know, most of my life I've won games. I've been a winner on, you know, all my teams. So that was hard. I'm not gonna lie. Those were some tough days where I was, you know, upset with, you know, losing, not only losing, but just even going into games feeling like, you know, we're heavily outmatched. Like I'll never go in a game and be like, we're gonna lose, but like to look over on the other side and be like, you know how everybody plays, you know, games like that where you're just like, man, like, we got to go through this again. And it was like, we'd be so close. And it was like, teams would just chill, like, against us for the first three quarters, and then the fourth would turn up and we would lose. We'd be like,
How do you think winning Rookie of the Year impacted your career?
I think it put a staple on my career. To me, it was an accomplishment that, you know, that I'll obviously remember forever. You know, it brought light to my name. People knew who I was. It's funny though, no one had picked me to win Rookie of the Year before, you know, before I got, you know, drafted.
Right.
But then anybody, the comments of being made that I won Rookie of the Year and, you know, my career seesawed a little bit, but like, from the beginning, I don't think anyone, you know, had me winning Rookie of the Year or doing the things that I was able to do, you know, in the NBA. So to me, it's a real accomplishment for me. But obviously, it was tough. You know, it put a target on my back. You know, a lot of the guys, I was getting attention, a lot of the guys in the league, especially when I was a rookie. Like, I remember, you know, even, you know, guys, you know, bringing out the best of guys because, you know, I was, you know, heavily favored for Rookie of the Year. So it was good, though. It was fun. It was competitive. I wouldn't want it any other way.
So with that being said, like, do you think that you got a lot of criticism for having a, like, being Rookie of the Year of the bad draft year when you came in?
Yeah, I mean, even I think that's a misconception. I don't think it was a bad draft year. If you look at everybody who panned out, like, our draft was, you know, our draft
solid.
It was solid. It was definitely solid. I think that, like I said before, it's an accomplishment that, you know, that I'm happy with. It definitely, like, people always say, like, I peaked at my first game. Like, I don't know what else you wanted. Like, I don't even know how I'm supposed to get nine steals twice in my career. You know what I mean? Like, you know, having 22, 12, 7, you know, 7, 9, you know what I mean? It was not many people can do that once. So, you know, obviously but hey, I'll take it any day of the week.
That bothers me. People, I hadn't read that, but clearly you've heard it. People said you peaked after that first game.
Yeah, I've heard it a bunch. You know, I mean, everyone, you know, guys, fans love to talk. It's part of the game.
Everybody got an opinion.
It is what it is. Yeah, everybody has an opinion.
That's wicked to me. So, I mean, in that rookie year, I think, season starts in October. So November 10th would have been maybe a week and a half into your season. You matched up against Kyrie and the Cavs. You remember that game, that double OT game?
Yep. I remember that game.
I love that. Yep. So as a young rook coming in, and I watched it, hell of a game on your part. What was that like being matched up?
Yeah, I mean, like it was a point where, you know, I I'll watch guys and I'll be like, man, I can't believe I'm going against this dude. And that was another one. It was Kyrie, like going against him. It was just exciting. Like, yeah, like I always had the mindset of like guys are, you know, really, really good. But, you know, when they were never really, really good against me until they are really good against me. You know what I mean?
So
going into that, it was just another one of those games where I was like, man, I gotta win, you know, and I gotta play well. And, you know, he's going to get the best version of myself.
So then when we talk about, and I want to, I guess, transition. We'll come back to the guys you played against, but I want to talk about real quickly guys that you've played with. And I mean, when we talk about your game and your mentality, Rondo, Kemba, CP3, Giannis, Wade, Harden, Jimmy, and Evan Turner. I threw him in there. I know his name's not huge like the rest of the guys, but Evan.
I was about to say you snuck ET in there.
I had to. How did being, at least viewing those guys, being around those guys, shape your understanding of the game and how you played?
I mean, yeah, we talk about Evan, right? Like, he was big for me, you know, when I was a rookie, just in terms of, you know, having somebody to ask questions to, somebody to show me the NBA lifestyle, you know, kind of the ins and outs of the league, you know, what not to do, what to do, you know, kind of taking me under his wing a little bit. He did a lot for me. In terms of the other guys, you know, I saw, you know, Rondo with, you know, how much he studied film and you know, what really paying attention to the game does. With Jimmy, you know, he was an ultra competitor. Yeah. Always, you know, always ready to compete. Every single game, you know, he gives it his all. So it was cool to see that from, you know, a guy of his stature. I think, you know, same thing with Chris Paul, you know, ultra competitive guy. Seeing somebody think the game like he does on the court, you know, similar to Rondo. And Giannis, just the work that he put in was, you know, was crazy to see him go from, him and I were, you know, around the same age at the time. So, and it was, you know, before he blew up. So to see the steps that he took to get to that level, you know, was inspiring. It was cool, like, to be a part of that, to, you know, help him out with, you know, things that he needed, and, you know, building a friendship with him was great. And then with Kemba, it was probably the first time I was able to see somebody lead just by being kind of who they are, right? Not even with their voice. Like, Kemba wasn't a huge talker. He wasn't a rah-rah guy. Like, he wasn't going to, you know, he wasn't going to be in your face about things. But he was able to lead just by, you know, how hard he played. You know, he just has natural leadership without using his voice. Like, it's a kind of a hard thing to explain, but you know, if you want somebody to, you know, follow and lead the pack, you know, Kemba can do that without, like I said, without his voice. So all those guys were great, and I try to take bits and pieces from, you know, all of them.
I got excited because you brought this up when you talk about Kemba leading by example. One of the biggest knocks of my favorite all-time player is Kevin Durant, okay? Yeah, so yeah. I want to hear from your perspective, if you've already seen it with Kemba, and obviously you're a player, you've seen it in real time, real live action. Can a player lead by example without having to be vocal like Kevin Durant gets knocked for?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at KD's career and you see obviously the things that he's accomplished, but if you look at his losses in the times that he's won, like, he's always performed. Like, it's not like it was him being vocal going to change his big toe on the line against.
No.
You know, like, it wasn't going to do that. Like, he played against Bron, you know, in Cleveland when they lost when he was with OKC. Like, you can't really, you know, you can't fault him for that either. Like, I'm not agreeing with the, you know, KD isn't a good leader. I think he shows up every day and he plays to the best of his ability. I think he gets, you know, he lets guys play their game. You know, he let Westbrook do his thing. Like, yeah. Westbrook's numbers weren't going down when playing with KD. Yeah. Steph's numbers weren't going down playing KD. Klay's numbers weren't going, like, he lets guys develop, you know, and play their game alongside of him. I just think people are going to knock guys, whatever, right? Like, people hate on Bron, people hate on KD, people hate on Steph. Like, it you know, people hate on Westbrook. Like, they're just going to find things to do because that's what critics and fans do.
I think that people just kind of just dislike greatness. So when you're doing too well, or if you're you hit some type of peak, everybody's just like, there's something wrong with this guy. Like,
for sure.
Yeah, I think that's kind of wild. But still kind of talking about the fact that, like, the players that you play with, being drafted with Giannis, playing with Giannis, all that good stuff there. Like, can you talk about, like, you kind of watched him grow firsthand. Can you talk about how special Jabari Parker was if he wasn't injured? Like, what was that dynamic when you were over there?
Yeah, I mean, for a while, there was a debate, like, who's better right now, Jabari or Giannis? Like, who's going to be the guy on the team? He was good. He was real good, man. He's still good. I don't like using the word was when people are playing, but he can hoop. Like, his injuries definitely affected him. You know, a lot of his game was athleticism, getting to the rim. I think mentally, I think the difference between the two of them is mental, and you can't really, you know, blame Jabari on that for all the injuries that he has gone through.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting traded and being on different teams, it's not an easy thing. And not everybody, you know, can adapt to it so quickly. So I think their career paths, you know, went different ways. Obviously, injuries played a big part. But for a while, you know, it was like, man, like, they're one and two, you know. And I don't know who knows which one's one and which one's two.
That's crazy to think about. Because we were talking to somebody, and that's the exact conversation that was brought up. It's like, if Jabari doesn't get hurt, and obviously you guys still get Chris Middleton, and that team continues on, that's a scary lineup for a lot of years.
Yeah, it sure is.
Well, I'm glad we're on the Bucks, because I do have a quick question, and obviously we'll talk about more mental stuff with trades and stuff like that later. But that 2015 to 2016 year, Jason's kids, their style of coaching and motivation, I should say, towards you. For some, would push them to another level. And I mean a small amount, right? Like, there's no way I would have been able to cope with some of the stuff that he was directing towards you. Not saying it was wrong, but it's how it works sometimes. So it did the opposite for you. It kind of stripped your confidence. And those were your words in the article I read. So, man, what do you think went wrong between you two?
It's tough. It's tough to talk about, because I think that I'm at a place in my life where I'm not trying to hold animosity towards anybody. I'm not trying to talk bad about anybody. I'm not trying to, you know, it's been a long time. But I think if I evaluate the situation, and even like you said, right, there's a small percentage of people that would have advanced. I think if I came out and told stories about, you know, him and I's arguments, our conversations, the things that he did to me, and you guys knew that background, I don't even think you would say a small amount of people would succeed in that. I just don't see a way where, you know, the things that him and I went through, where anybody could succeed. And I don't know. I would hope he's, you know, I get asked about him in a lot of interviews. So I try not to just sit here and bash him, because there's things that he does great. And I give him credit for it. His in-game adjustments, you know, the approach that he takes with about teammates trusting each other and communication that he forces on guys. Like, some things he does the best I've ever seen. But then there was some things that him and I went through that were, and I know he went through it with other guys that, you know, that's for me is unforgivable, right? Like, I can't, you know, there's no excuses for those things. And a lot, it played a big part on my career. But I don't blame him for nothing. I don't, like, I'm a man at the end of the day. I take full responsibility for everything that I did. But, you know, that's probably what I got to say about it.
Damn. That's such a mature and responsible answer. And number one, the big thing of that we're trying to do with what we're doing here on this pod is kind of, one, bridge the gap between normal people and players, right? So there's not as much animosity, but two, give you guys a platform to tell your side of stories where it just, the other media outlets can't, right? And so for you to sit here and tell me, you know, hey, you know, it is what it is. It played out how it played out, and I'm not bashing someone, bro. Much respect.
Appreciate you.
Much respect.
Because I know, especially with that, a lot of people would definitely just like, oh, this is my time to shine, to be over here and just dog this
fuck
person
Jason
out.
Kid.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
But I think a lot of people just need to communicate, learn that different people take different types of communication. But yeah. But like you
said, you know how words yeah. can carry yep. on, and you know yep. it could turn into something. My bad. It could turn into something that's, you know, it does not need it, right? Yeah. Like whatever happened. Yeah. It is what it is. You know, I felt the way he felt the way.
Still kicking.
Mm-hmm. Right. Moving forward.
All right. Exactly.
All right. Now, 2016, 2017. The year was going well. Rondo got hurt. Give me an example of the experience of what it was playing with, like, Rondo, Jimmy, Wade, like, just that solid team that y'all had over in Chicago.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was an up-and-down year. But during the playoffs, it was cool to see, like, a guy of D-Wade and a guy like Jimmy, you know, their stature to kind of let Rondo hold the keys for a little bit.
Yeah.
So they basically – Rondo was like, listen, like, I've been watching the film. I feel like we can exploit this against the Celtics on the offense. And they were locked in. They were tuned in. They were like, okay, let's do this. And once that happened, I think we were up 2-0. And then Rondo got hurt. But what he was showing us was working. And we were like, man, yeah. like that, like it was showed Rondo's true, just like his mindset, it showed his mind on display, like his knowledge of the game. And it was cool to see, man. It was cool. Like I really feel like if he doesn't get hurt, I feel like we win that series.
Yeah,
for sure. And that's why, because these were like kind of like on not the downside, but the back ends of their career, of Rondo and Wade's career. And so I don't think it was expected for y'all to go as far as y'all did.
Yeah.
Because of that situation. But what role did you play on that team?
My role was up and down that whole year. I'm not gonna lie. Like I went from games where Jimmy was hurt, I was starting to and playing well to you know, I had like DMPs that year, like didn't play any games, yeah. didn't dress for some games, right? So my role was up and down. And kind of once you get into that mix, it's just a, you know, people use the stay ready, you yeah. know, all the time in the NBA, just stay ready. So my minutes were up and down. I was sixth man sometimes. I was, you know, backup point guard sometimes. Mm-hmm. I wasn't. So it was like I said, it was a crazy year. It was Fred Hoiberg's first year coaching. So he was going through, you know, some of those things as a head coach for the first year. So he was trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
So it was a cluster of things going on that year.
Did you focus on a certain side of the court?
Yeah, I was trying to focus on defense to get me on the court. I feel like a lot of the times if guys are trying to work their way on the court, they should focus on the defensive end. Like yeah. if you're getting stops out there, if you're stopping guys, then you'll get on the court more, because most teams have those guys that are already taking care of offense. Like our game is so isolated right now, but you know, two or three guys can carry a whole offense,
yeah.
and then the rest got to fill in the blanks, right? And a lot of the times guys don't think, okay, if I can be a lockdown defender and guard the other team's best guy, I can find my way on the court. So that's what I was trying to do.
I love that answer, because we've seen it with DeJounte Murray. He talked about that when he was in San Antonio. So I got to ask, man, again, we talked about defense earlier on. How the hell did you learn to focus on that so primarily?
I think I figured it out just trying to, like I said, finding my way on the court, right? There was some times where I was out the lineup and I was like, you know, I got to find a way, and what's my way? Again, it wasn't going to be me coming in and scoring 20, 25 a night, because the opportunity wasn't there. Like yeah. I would have tried to fight something that I couldn't be able to fight. Like it wouldn't have worked. So if I figured, you know, if I can guard the best player on the team, if I can be a pest on the defensive end, yeah. you know, kind of coach would have no choice, and then I'll get more minutes, and then, okay, I can sneak in offense here and yeah. there and mm-hmm. keep building that up to eventually where, you know, I can be like, okay, now I can have a more of a significant role on the offensive end. But the staple was always to, you know, be a lockdown defender.
I love that. That honestly, man, that's always been one of my favorite fucking things about the game, is not only being able to get a bucket on someone, but if you can strap someone on the other end or at least make effective defensive plays, and that's how you become one of my favorite players, man. That's how I play ball. Yep. So I love it.
Since you focus on defense so much, how was it like guarding? Who was your hardest person to guard? Is what I'm asking. Because we was watching a clip of the double overtime with Kyrie, second week in the game, and you have to guard one yeah. of the most elite point guards. So, like, who's the hardest person you ever guarded?
Man, that's tough, right? It depends on the night. Like, guarding Kyrie when he's on is, you know, damn near impossible. Guarding Steph when, you know, guarding Steph in general is hard because he doesn't stop moving, so you got to chase him everywhere. So, you know, that's another one. And then Westbrook, when he was, you know, when he is having that role where he was doing everything and he was in constant attack mode, it was that you knew you were in for a long night there too.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about Charlotte again, especially since we're coming off of Jay Lamb.
Lambo.
Yeah.
That's my guy.
I want to focus actually on Dwight Howard for a second. Because, no funny stuff. No, again, you know what we're about now. No funny stuff.
It's basketball.
Right, yes.
No, I get it.
So at that time, when you were there and you guys were together, Dwight was 32 years old. He played in damn near, I think he only missed one game that year, 81 out of 82. But he was averaging almost 17 points, 12 and a half boards, and almost two blocks. So what do you think, in your opinion, on Dwight Howard? What was the most slept on quality about him?
I think you said it right. Him and the ability to come in and get those numbers every single night. It's tough because no knock on Dwight. Like he like I said, he can come in and give you those numbers. But I think it was just the other things that like people not even off the court stuff. I'm saying on the court stuff. Like I think that. I think that same year, right, he averaged those numbers, but he also led the league in offensive fouls, and he also led the league in travels. And, like, a lot some things that he would voice to the team, and, again, Dwight's a, you know what I mean, I liked him as a player. He's a good dude, a good player. Like, I have no knocking on him, but, like, I think the reason why people would start to be, like, on him, given those numbers, was because a lot of the times he would preach things and then, like, kind of do the opposite in the games, but like he would still get his numbers though, you know what I mean? And like the defensive, you know, on defense, was he following the defensive plan where it wasn't affecting other guys, and you know, guys would get frustrated. But I mean, it's hard to complain about a guy who does go out there and does get those numbers. So I think it was like the conversation is happening about him because of those other things, right? If it was just he was averaging 16, 12, whatever, then there would be like no debate, like what's going on here? Why isn't he getting the respect that he was supposed to be getting? But I think it's because of those other things that people started to question, like, is this still the same Dwight as we've seen for a while?
Bro, that's an interesting take. I had
you cannot average the most offensive fouls and travels in the same season. Like, it's got to be one or the other. You can't lead in both. You know what I mean? Like, and that was, and I think, like, we had team meetings, like, yo, bro, like, we gotta do this, we gotta do that. And it'd be like, yeah. And then when we get on the court, it'd be like, what happened?
You think he just lacked, like, fundamentals? Like,
I don't know. I don't know. Like, he had, I think he had a few bad habits. He'd spin baseline, step out of bounds. Like, the game started to change a little bit. Guys started, you know, the flopping on defense started to come to play a little bit. Like, you know, the game evolves a little bit. And some guys adjust to it well, and some guys it takes a little longer. Like, by no means, I think Dwight is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
He's, you know, one of the best bigs to ever play our game. In his prime, he's one of the most unstoppable players that ever touched the ball. Like, he could do a lot of things. He was even good as a backup big. Like, he could do a lot of things. But I think if we are on the subject of what was going on with him, I think in having those numbers, I think explaining the other side, it kind of makes more sense to people.
I respect the answer. It's not one that I've ever heard, so I appreciate it. So then pivoting back to – because you just said Jay Lamb, you know, your guy. What's some of the best memories you had on that Hornets team?
Man, just kicking it with me, Jay Lambo, Kemba, and Marvin Williams. All of us. Yeah, like three great dudes, like, you know, playing with them on the court, hanging out with them off the court, you know, doing whatever it was, you know, on the plane, you know, vibing up, laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the best times of my career, for sure. Frank Kaminsky, him too.
Frank. Okay. What is it about Marv that so many players are so fond of?
Marv is probably one of the greatest people I've ever met in my life. Like, not even just for basketball. Like, he just has this... He has this way about him where he carries himself. He doesn't say nothing bad about nobody. He's just like an OG, he's just like a grandpops, you know what I mean? He's cool. He's always, you know, he works hard. He's always, you know, giving you, you know, inspirational stuff without, you know, sounding corny or like, you know, kind of, he's the type of person that when he talks, people listen. And I think that carries a long way, you know, in his life. He's just a, you know, he's just a pure human being. Yeah. And it was just tough. It was tough. It would be like in pivotal times where he's setting offensive foul on the screen and Kemba's coming off and it's just like,
it stopped the momentum.
Yeah, it whatever stops the momentum, and it's like, you know what I mean. Then you puts coach in a bind. Like, are you gonna play him? Are you gonna not? He's in foul trouble. Like, we can't. Yeah, at this point in the game, we can't afford one of those. Like, we got to take care of the ball. Like, and Dwight said he's an ultra competitor too, so he wants the ball in the post, and like that kind of game of basketball is, you know, is
it's diluting,
you know, worn out a little bit. It's diluting. Yeah, so it's like it's a hard. It was a hard dynamic to, you know, to accomplish.
Kind of just side note, if you had to, because like there were comparisons between Shaq and Dwight. If you just looking at their, just who would you rather pick?
Hold on, Mike. I think the better question is, well, two questions, and you can answer that one. But mine off that would be, is he as dominant as we or the fans think that he is?
Who, Dwight?
Yeah.
Yep. Because Shaq, you know how Shaq says, hey, don't put that D word in there whenever he's talking about Dwight. So,
or any big man.
No, I mean, I think Orlando Dwight Orlando Dwight was definitely him. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, he was killing. Like, he made it to the championship. Like, he was doing his thing. But like, I think the comparison to Shaq's, I just can't.
It's not the thing.
Can't do it.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's just not the same. But like, the Diesel was a force different. That we have never seen in our lives and probably will never see again. Like,
yeah.
Man, I think Shaq was a one of a kind player. Like, he's there's nothing different about him.
Yeah.
If we had to put a starting five of all time for the people that you played with, who would be your starting five?
All prime?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that's tough. I probably CP at the one. Giannis would be in there.
I'm gonna say seven because I know you're gonna. I'm gonna say seven.
Let's go seven.
Start at seven.
Seven. All right. Yes. Cool. It would be Giannis, D Wade, Jimmy. Oh wait. James was in there.
Damn, that's tough.
Dwight. I put Dwight in there at the five. I feel like I'm gonna forget somebody, but I gotta go with Kemba and Rondo. Am I forgetting somebody?
So you're PG. So you got.
Who's your starting point?
Yeah, So you got CP at your one.
Put CP at the one.
Yeah.
Put Jimmy at the two. Oh man. I don't know. Maybe. It's preference. People are gonna look at me crazy for not having D Wade at the two in his prime.
Yeah,
I know,
yeah.
But like, I don't know, man. Prime D Wade is probably tough. I mean, yeah, I can put Jimmy at the three, but then I leave James out the prime. Yeah, and I put D Wade at the two. I'll put Jimmy at the three, and I'll put Giannis at the four and Dwight at the five. I know leaving James is crazy.
You know,
leaving
it's even
James Harden is out, it's crazy.
What's even crazier is that when I first put this question in there, it started off as, you know, put a starting five together that could compete actually with Team USA, because I looked at the teammates you had and I'm like, based on how he goes with this, that team could actually compete with Team USA.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's sick. So you said CP, then you're going Jimmy or D Wade, then Jimmy.
D Wade, then Jimmy, then Giannis.
You know the defense that's being played out there.
That's what I'm defense. Saying. That's what I got to commit. I got to commit to the defensive end.
Oh my commit. God, that's sick.
Straight defense.
I got to commit there.
It's crazy. Oh. It's crazy you said that because that you put CP3 first because we did a take about a month ago, and a lot of people said they'll pick Rondo over CP3 just with their accolades.
I think out of 30,000 votes, bro, it was like 75-25 for Rondo.
What was the question?
Who would you pick as a point guard, Rondo or CP3?
To lead a team in their prime, yeah.
CP3. Yeah, I mean, it could go either way. I would pick either one of them.
Yeah.
It's just hard because if you look at today's game, there's so much shooting in today's game. That's the only thing that holds me back.
With Rondo?
Yeah, but like, you can't go wrong either one. It's 50-50 to me, but that's the only reason why I chose. I mean, it's interesting though. Like, Rondo got the championships, you know, in his career. Like, you know.
It's kind of CP3 one of my favorite point guards. Like, but you'll hear so many people say that he's overrated or that he has like no real accolades. He's not that good of a point guard. I was like, that's crazy to me. Like, I'm not saying it's a wash, but I just don't feel like people respect CP3 as much as they should. Because
they need to go watch New Orleans CP3.
That's what I'm saying. And like because of. Only thing I can really say about Paul is the fact that somewhat of a defensive liability, but being the star he is, you surround him with defensive players to make him not much. Like, but
yeah, and he's like top 10 in steals.
In steals, yeah, steals never makes turnovers. Like, but yeah, I think everybody's judging him off of
not winning a championship and get injured in the playoffs. Like,
still,
what have you done for me lately? Type, I get it.
It's still one of the most frustrating things. I mean, I wanted to go with Satan to win, but I was so pissed when he did that spin move. So mad. I was like, where are you going?
Yeah, it's tough. He's had some tough moments in the playoffs, but yeah, I mean, he's an all time great. Both Hall of Famers, though.
Oh, for sure. I was about to ask about the super team question.
Oh, I got a question for you.
The super team bro. Questions.
All right, listen. So we got a lot of flack here, and we've had multiple opinions, but I want to get yours. First, define a super team.
A super team has three, I wouldn't say all-stars. They got to have three superstars on their team.
Okay. All right, man, Kyle's looking at my funny.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Jay Lamb said the same thing. But then how can we say that the Phoenix Suns, when they picked up, obviously Brad, they were saying that was a super team. Brad wasn't a superstar. To me, he was all-star.
He was all-star.
Here's the thing about super teams. We saw the most super of all super teams when KD went to Golden State.
Exactly.
Like that put fear in the league. Like the league was like, you know, who's gonna win it? Like, no question Golden State's gonna
exactly.
win.
Yes.
Like, nobody. Yeah. So now it's like when a super team is so called created, there's that fear factor really isn't there, right? Because it's like, yo, we've all played against Golden State. We've all played against KD with the Warriors. So, like, anything less than that is deemed to be beatable, right? Like,
true.
I think on paper, I think that Phoenix is a super team. But do I think that it strikes fear in anybody?
No.
Not really.
That's right? Exactly like, what I
like,
said. Exactly.
Like, the confidence to beat Phoenix is a lot higher than the confidence was to beat Golden State. And, like, everybody going through that run and dealing with how they played and adjusting to that and, like, finding ways to, you know, beat a team full of shooters is, like, now adapted in the league. Yeah. So, like, it doesn't – it's hard because, like – and it's different dynamic too, right? Clay was getting 60 off four dribbles, right? Like, he doesn't need a dribble. Like, Brad isn't – like, I don't think he's that type of dude to do that, right? Like, he's going to put the ball on the floor a little bit. He's going to take it. The rim, like there's going to be a lot more, you know, that rather than just a straight sniper on the outside just shooting threes, right? All three of those guys like to put the ball on the floor. When for Golden State, it was like, you know, KD doesn't need to put the ball on the floor. Steph doesn't need to put the ball on the floor. Klay doesn't need to, but they can spread you out so far that like they're just passing, you know, everything, passing the ball around, and then, you know, they're so. That's probably my answer. I don't know if that answers the question, but like, I think it is a super team. I just think that it's not something that somebody fears.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, you know, the argument actually started with the question of is currently the current Boston Celtics team, are they a super team or can they be considered a super team?
I don't think so.
It's a really good team.
I think it's just a really, really good team. Like they're like, a super team, I think, is a collective of guys that they put together that are like, have been, you know, monsters, you know, on other teams, you know, have been superstars on other teams. These guys have been together for a while. People were not high on Porzingis after a while. Like nobody was talking about, I mean, they talk about he can shoot the ball well, but like,
he wasn't the unicorn no more.
He wasn't the unicorn no more. And like, then they added Porzingis. Like, Al Horford played real well. Derek White played real well. Like, these are guys that, you know, aren't superstars elsewhere. But, you know, they got, you know, Drew Holiday was a great pickup. People don't consider him as a superstar, but he's a great player.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I think they're just a very well-rounded team that fit together real good.
Yeah, I said, if you use the word super team, it kind of discredits the organization for Boston specifically, because like, they did what they had to do. They found those pieces. And then the pushback was, well, the Clippers are a super team last year. I said, no, people were telling Westbrook to retire. Should he know? But people were telling him to retire. And then they put him on a, like, on paper, you're going to be like, how do these four guys play together? But at the same time, if you lived it, they were not a super team. This is why they lasted for 2 years. So,
Right. I don't think they're a super team either.
All right, good. So that's the basketball segment. You know, after I sent you these questions, I got to looking at these damn things. And I was like, it's like, man, this is a lot of mental stuff. So I'm going to pick and choose here, if you're cool with that.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
Because I want to go deep, but not too deep, right? So I want to talk about, and you've said this multiple times, man, but obviously winning Rookie of the Year, being in those discussions with the GM and the coach, and again, you said this, you weren't asking for anything, but they were asking you, like, hey, what do you think about this, this, and that? And it made you feel like, you know, you were really being a part of something to grow in Philly. And then you get traded. So how'd you deal with that? What was the emotions going through that process?
It was tough, because I felt like it was the first time in my life, you know, I've ever been traded. I had to get, you know, pack all my stuff in 2-3 days and move to Milwaukee. It was a weird feeling, right? Because it's like Milwaukee traded somebody that, you know, that they, you know, loved. You know, the people loved them, the staff loved them, the players loved them. So I was walking into a situation where, you know, locker room was quiet. They just lost a brother that, you know, they've been playing with for a long time. So it was like, damn, like, I didn't ask for this, but like, it just happened, right? So like, yeah. I mean, obviously guys were, you know, welcoming. So it was awkward there, and then I was dealing with other emotions that I felt like a team just gave up on me. You know, so there was, you know, trying to get over that. So it was hard. It was hard. There was a lot of different emotions. Like, my mind, I didn't understand why. I was constantly trying to figure out like, why'd they trade me? Like, what did I do? Did I say something wrong? Like, they had me in all their plans, like, What did I do to deserve, you know, this? Like, I just won Rookie of the Year and then I, you know, get traded. It wasn't making sense to me. So I think the whys were something that I tried to figure out for a long time until I was just like, you know what, I got to stop trying to figure this out.
Let me ask you, and answer this the best you can, or if you don't feel like there's an answer you can give, then, you know, obviously let me know that too. But how would you compare that feeling, or what is the equivalent to that for the common person?
I don't know, man. I don't want to be too dramatic, because like, losing your job, like, there's not another one, you know, waiting for you. Obviously getting traded, you're still getting paid, you know, very, very well.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe getting transferred in a position and they're like, yeah, you got to be here by tomorrow and you got to leave your friends and family. I don't know. It's a tough thing to, you know, it's a tough thing to comprehend if you don't, you know, if you haven't really been through that situation.
Yeah. See, my opinion on it is that I think you separate the two, like the emotional aspect of it versus what's actually happening. Like, the feeling of why something's not happening, or at least why someone would put you on this pedestal, invite you into certain chats, make you feel like you're a part of something, and then poof, it's over with. That's the part that really gets me. Not the fact that, you know, traded to another team. Yeah, you're making millions. Yeah, you're playing somewhere else. Yeah, that's cool. But that feeling lives with you for a very long time, which
for sure
I know is rough. So that's why I was trying to see like how we could relate that to the common folk.
Want to say hello?
Hello. How are
what's
you?
What's up? How you hey, doing? What's up?
Say my name is Red.
My name's Red.
It is a pleasure to meet you.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, look, I'm going down this, and then we'll turn around. But for me, it'd be the equivalent of like of having a rocky relationship with your dad or something, and finally you get that back a little bit, and he's like, yeah, you know, we can do this, I'm giving you all these promises, and okay. They're gonna establish a relationship, and then gone. Kind of like that Fresh Prince episode. Why you don't want
right, right,
you
know? Right, right.
So that's yeah, that's what I mean, I'm saying.
No, yeah, I get that too, and it, yeah, like, you know, or you know, a girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Telling you the world, we gonna be yep. this, we gonna be yeah. that, and then she just pales on you.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? Goes with another guy,
right? Over another dude, right?
With another guy.
Yeah, Houston is a good one.
Like, what was the biggest hurdle at Houston?
I don't know. I felt like I could see, you know, seeing my way out of Houston, getting cut. That was the first time I've ever been cut. Things weren't going well with the team. I could see they started to get away from me. I felt like I didn't really, you know, get a chance to excel in the team. Like, there was just a lot of different things going on. But yeah, no, I mean, I was going through personal things too. Like, I was, before I got cut, like probably a week before that, my fiance at the time, she ended up calling off the engagement. She left with my 1-year-old, she wasn't even one yet. She was probably like 6-7 months. She had left me to California. So I was there in Houston kind of, you know, without her, without my daughter. A week later, I get released. And so it was rock bottom for me in my life. Like, I've never, you know, been that low. I've never been that depressed. I've never, you know, had that anxiety, you know, feeling like that in my life. So it was kind of a moment for me where I'd have been like, you know, who am I as a person? What do I want to do? What are my moral values in my life? Am I going to take, you know, basketball more serious? Not that I wasn't. I just was, you know, all these questions were, you know, kind of going in my head. Yeah. And kind of, you know, how I could fix everything. You know, I wanted to be more stable. I was sick and tired of playing in a new city each year. You know, what did that look like for me? You know, how was I going to, you know, get my family back together? You know, and luckily I was able to kind of accomplish all those things in given time. But yeah, Houston was hard for me. It was a rough time for me. I think it was the first time in my life where I let, you know, the NBA mentality, you know, kind of get to me, you know, with going out at night, hanging out with girls, you know, doing a lot of things that, you know, you can't balance. And, you know, I was trying to be one person and be, you know, and it was being a different person at the same time.
Right. Well, what were some of the steps that you took to get back on your feet?
Therapy was big for me. Started going to therapy. Just started looking inwards in myself, like thinking about who I wanted to be as a person. You know, things that, you know, I needed to fix on a daily habit. You know, I stopped trying to, you know, figure everything out in one day. I kind of just, you know, each day I would take it day by day and just try to do the best I could and try to be the best person I could be, you know, each day. So therapy was big for me. Started getting into reading, started reading things that I normally wouldn't have. Started being more vulnerable, being more open with people. And just, you know, just started to talk about, you know, my feelings a little bit and not look at it as such a, you know, negative thing to do.
Mm. I love that. And so this actually segues. So seeing your child there, that was beautiful. So I want to ask you then, as a father, how did actually becoming a father influence your approach on life or realistically even in basketball?
Yeah, I mean, it changed, right? Because, I mean, every decision that I was making, you know, even now is not only about me, right? It's for my kids. It's for my wife. Like, all the decisions I make away from them still affect them in some sort of way. Yeah. You know, who I am, you know, how I speak, how I present myself, you know, it's not only just for me, it's for them too. So, you know, kind of realizing that, you know, kind of grounded me a little bit and was like, okay, you know, I really need to start thinking before I do things. You know, I can't be impulsive. I gotta, you know, if I'm going through something, how can I handle it in a healthy way instead of just trying to, you know, put a Band-Aid over something, right? Like, how can I heal, you know, how can I do things that, you know, that they will look at me and then they'll be like, okay, you know, if I'm going through that, I saw Dad do this and that, and, you know, I could, you know, try to help them in a healthy way instead of me leading, you know, by a bad example.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing being a father. So what's one lesson that you hope to instill into your children?
That's a good question. I mean, obviously every parent wants their kids to, you know, kind of be patient through things, but, you know, life's going to throw a bunch of different things at them. You know, life throws a bunch of things at everybody. It's just, you know, kind of how we handle them, right? Lean on the people that are close to you. You know, how can you handle tough times in a healthy way, and how can you build good habits? You know, I think building good habits is a big lesson that, you know, I'm going to try to, you know, teach them.
While you were playing, or just while you were growing, just maturing, like, how did your vision of success change over time?
I think for a while, my vision of success was like, you know, how can I put the most money in my pocket? You know, what can I do to make the most money? Like, I was so money driven on, you know, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing to, you know, want money and to chase dollars and to do all those things. But I think as I've grown more and more, I think that success is just, you know, me being happy, you know, every day. You know, I can be happy. I remember growing up, I didn't have a lot, like, and I was, you know, the happiest kid in the world. So finding that happiness with what I have, with the people that I'm surrounded with, not to say that I don't go out and try to, you know, make money and do those things, but just finding a better balance of, okay, like, the with success, what does that look like for me is being happy, and also, you know, just getting small wins each day.
You kind of answered that question, because I had a follow-up question with that. Like, what do you think is better? What is more important to you, at least, being a good person or your basketball career?
Oh, being a good person, 100%. That's always first for me. I've made it to the highest level. I played at the highest level for 10 years. You know, I was plenty good in basketball. You know, I just, you know, being a good person, you know, it takes working on yourself each day, and, you know, you can't be a good enough person ever. So, you know, working on that till the day I die is something that I'm always going to do. I'm always going to, you know, I think the people around me would say, you know, I'm a good dude, or, you know, I take care of my family. I try to live the right way. I try to treat people how I want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
I heard this the other day, and I want to ask you, have you ever met a player that's worked literally as hard as you or harder than you and knew that they'd only play 3 to 5 minutes or maybe even get DMPs?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely other guys that I've seen that were, you know, played less than me or in a similar position to me that worked hard every single day. And it's tough. It's a grind, right? Like, people do a lot just to stay in this league, and it's a hard thing when you're at that level, where you're, you know, when you're an interchangeable, you know, player. It takes a lot. You got to be on every day. You got to be the, you know, you got to be in there early. You got to be working out hard. You got to be a good person. Like, you got to have a smile on your face. You got to be willing to take criticism that maybe you don't deserve. And I think the people that learn that the fastest are the people that stay in the league a long time, right? There's the guys that are talented that come in the league, and it's not, they're not in the position that they want to be. So they act out, they do things that, that necessarily, you know, that won't keep them in the league. And, you know, if they just be patient, and they, not saying be a yes man or let anybody disrespect you, but, like, if you can be patient and if you can play that 12th, 11th, 10th, 13th man on the floor for a little while, your role can increase. You know, we've seen it time and time again. We've seen guys from the G League come up and be patient and wait their turn and end up starting, right? A prime example is Fred VanVleet, right? He came up from the G League, and then, you know, he earned his way. You know, he wasn't playing, then he started playing, then he became the backup point guard, and then he ended up starting. And then, you know, he's one of the top paid guys in the league, right? Like, but he doesn't get that without being patient with himself and understanding what's going to get him on the court. You know, same thing with Jimmy, right? Like, he went from being a defensive guy to, you know, a superstar in the league. Yeah. Like, it's just, if you can be patient for how you're going to get on the court, then you'll have the opportunity at some point.
All right, my man. So you are now chasing career, I'm sorry, business endeavors, which you've been doing for a while. Let me ask you a question about that part of it. What's some of the biggest challenges you face transitioning from being a professional athlete and playing professional basketball to now being a business owner?
Biggest obstacle I've had is trusting the right people. Everyone in business has their story of losing, you know, money and trusting the wrong people. And, you know, I went through my fair share of lumps. Mm-hmm. Figuring out people's agendas and what they want from you. Every deal looks good. You know what I mean? You read a deal on paper and you're like, oh, man, this looks good. I want to be a part of it, right? Kind of pulling back and really dissecting things and being, you know, figuring out who people are, getting to know them. You know, do they want what's best for you, or are they just looking for money? That's been the toughest part for me. Luckily, I've been in the business for a while that I feel like I found good, solid people that I work with, and you know, it's going to take flight soon.
What skills or lessons, for at least playing basketball and being in that realm first of all, from the time you started playing basketball to the time that you start to feel your career phases out, what lessons during that time or skills have you tried to apply to your business endeavors?
I know in basketball, like, regardless, you know, there was probably some days where I didn't do nothing, but that's mm-hmm. rarely. But even if I, you know, on an off day, like, I'll still make sure I do treatment on my body, or, you know, I'll get in the gym and do some spot shots, do free throws. Like, every day I was trying to do something to keep my mind on basketball, you know, watching film, doing something.
Yeah.
With business, now that, you know, it's not really, you know, if you're a part of a company, then you might be doing something every day. But if you're, you know, an entrepreneur and, you know, kind of figuring out your way and doing deals here and there, I think educating yourself each day on something, you know, different that you're focusing on, like with me for real estate, I try to learn something about real estate, you know, each day, whether it's different terms in real estate, whether it's talking to different people, whether it's going to meetings, right? Like, I try to do something each day to keep my mind flowing and keep learning, right? So taking that work ethic of basketball, you know, into the business world and figuring out what that looks like.
I do have a business mind frame. I just didn't know. That's what she's coming. But no, what books are you reading? Or what books have helped you get to that mind frame?
I read The Money and Law of Attraction.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a good one.
Yeah. Yep. I'm reading that one.
Those two are Rich Dad, Poor Dad is really good just to mm-hmm. start off on your mindset. You know, I try not to just go crazy on business.
Yeah.
I try to read like a business book and then, you know, a self-help and then something totally irrelevant that, you know, whether it's a autobiography or, you know, fiction, whatever.
Just keep a good balance of everything.
Yeah.
Got to keep the mind balanced.
So your quote in the article I read said, "I just didn't want to be looked at as a shitty basketball player." So my question for you is, in 10 years plus, when we look back at your career, what do you want people to say about NCW?
I just want people to, you know, every time I stepped on the floor, I played the hardest I possibly could. Yeah. I think that's the biggest compliment that I get, you know, especially being in Orlando, right? Like, I'll see a bunch of people and they'd be like, "Man, you know, watching you, I knew every time you were going to give it your all." And I was like, yeah, like that's what I want people to see me. You know, that's how I want people to view me. It's how I've always been, no matter what level of success that, you know, that I had. You know, from being the best player on a team to being the last man on a, you know, coming into the game. That's all I want people to realize, is that whenever I stepped on the floor, like, I was, you know, sacrificing my body and giving it all.
Yeah.
You reminded me of something. You obviously have been around Orlando for, 5 years now? So,
yep.
Paolo, what's one slept on quality about Paolo?
I mean, I just don't think he gets, like, you can't even name a slept on quality. I just think he gets slept on in general. Like, I don't get it. Like, I really don't understand it. Like, the things that he was doing this year, the things that he did his rookie year, I was like, yo, like, why isn't he on ESPN every day? Like, why isn't the league pushing him like that? I don't know why, but, like, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, yo, like, it's crazy, like, it's the second round of the playoffs as a, you know what I mean, as a second year player, like, the things that I don't know what it is, and performing at a high level. And like, he, I, if I would have picked one thing, I would have I would think that people sleep on how competitive he is. Like, if you watch him play, like, he's not a super emotional guy. And even that's his personality. He's quiet. But like he's ultra competitive. Like, he wants to win. You can see it on his face sometimes if you're really paying attention and you really watch, like, you know, if you're a Magic fan. But like, nah, he deserves more coverage. He deserves a bigger platform. He's like, he's an amazing hooper.
This is just a question, speculation. Is he comparable to Bron?
I don't know. I think they're similar. They have similar attributes, yeah, that are the same at a young age. I don't know, man. I don't. It's hard, yeah, to compare anything.
I know. Yeah, that's what, right?
Like, it's just a big, like.
It's early. It's way too early to say it too. But
yeah, it's early. Yeah, it's early. It's like, yeah. It's tough.
So, who are some of your favorite young players then?
Good question. I like Paolo. It's rookies or just, I mean, obviously, Wemby's
crazy,
insane, right? Like, Anthony Edwards, he's 23, yeah, right? I think he's 22, right?
The dog.
He's tough. I like his game. He's one of my favorite players in the league right now. Anthony Edwards. I like Paolo. I like Wemby. I'm trying to think of a guy who's like a little bit under the radar that I think is going to be real good.
Jalen Williams.
Jalen's tough. Williams.
I really like Jalen Williams. He's the perfect fit. I actually was at OKC's practice and I was talking to their coach. He's one of my favorites too. I think he's underrated too. He's so efficient. Mm-hmm. Like, he shoots like over 40 from three and like over 55 from the field, like something crazy, right? Like, and logs down, right? Logs down on the defensive end. So, yeah, those guys.
Hey, who's your GOAT?
Kobe.
Ah, man, the GOAT conversation is tough. I mean, it's either LeBron or Jordan. I flip flop depending on the month.
He doesn't like LeBron.
Oh my gosh, I'm not going through this again. I'm a LeBron hater. I respect him.
Look at his longevity though. Like, you know what I mean? Like that alone can, you know, you can consider him the GOAT just because he's done this. He's done this for so long
at this level.
Or you consider MJ, at this level. Or you'd say MJ's the GOAT because like during those years in his span, we've never seen anybody perform like that.
Yeah.
Right. Like. Only thing that on the months that I'm pro Jordan, the only thing that knocks is that Dallas series with LeBron.
That first year.
That eats at me a little bit. Like, I'm like, I just can't picture MJ ever performing in the finals like that. Like, I know in other series that he hasn't played that well, and you could go and pick and choose playoff series where MJ didn't play that well, but like, on a stage like that in the championship, I just don't see that. And I don't know what that counts for, but like, I don't know. But I think more often than not, I probably go LeBron. I think just because the longevity, he's been doing it for so long. He's really still a top 10 player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
At age
100,
it's crazy.
Exactly. I didn't say I don't like Bron. I'm a Kobe fan, so I feel like it's my duty to be a Bron hater. So that's why I respect what LeBron does. He's a great player.
Kobe, true Kobe fan.
It's my duty.
You gotta exit. You gotta exit.
See you later, buddy.
It's never.
Yeah, it's my duty to be a LeBron hater. That's all it is.
So do you think that Kobe's better than Jordan?
Mm.
So I don't think Kobe's better than Jordan, but I think that he replicated Jordan so much that he could have surpassed him just because of his mentality. Jordan had the killer mentality, but I mean, like, at that time, just in the net, like, the that time of that era, I feel like the work wasn't as put in as much like Kobe was, or just it might be media, it might be something like that. But literally, just he replicated Mike, so it's like, that's my preference. I grew up with Kobe, so I didn't watch Mike. I watched Kobe, so that's why I picked Kobe.
What do you think?
As far as what? Do I think he's better than Jordan?
Yeah, what do you think?
No. I love Kobe. I love everything he represented. I loved, you know, his career. But I just don't see, how people can put him better than Jordan. Because people who are Kobe fans, when they argue about him and LeBron, and they say that he has 5 championships, they can't use that argument against Jordan. So it's just like I like him better than Jordan. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean he's the best. Like, there's a lot of guys that people like that aren't the best player in the world.
Paul George right now.
Yeah, like all the youngins love Paul George.
Great player. Just,
you know what I mean? They're a little
dirty. Yeah, I mean, I'm...
No. Where are you going with that? I mean, no, that's funny.
No, I was going to say, I don't know. I love PG. He's a great hooper, but like all the youngins think he's like the best player in the league right now.
I know.
Just like I just don't see that.
But. I mean, if I'm honest, I do think it's interchangeable. Mike Brown, Kobe, but who I grew up with. I mean, interchangeable.
Mike Brown,
Kobe.
No,
interchangeable. No. Just to be honest. It depends what you're looking at. If you're looking at stats, if you're looking at gameplay, if you're looking at like mentality, like rings. It depends what you're looking at. Kobe is 3.
I don't know. I'm saying it's hard to. People love Kobe. I get it. I don't know. Like when you come into a debate and you got to bring in like real facts of like what happened like in their careers. Some of the things I'm just like, it's easy to ignore when it comes to Kobe.
Like what?
Like, just like he was a super volume dude. Like, both Bron and MJ shot way better from the field than Kobe. Like, it's not even close. And there's other guy Kobe's had performances that weren't like great at certain points of his career that like. People like to overlook because they think, you know, that he's had, you know, I don't know. It's just hard. The field goal percentages at times was like,
it's crazy.
It wasn't top 3 ever, you know, good. Like it got crazy at times. Right. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a Kobe hater. I am from Boston. I'm not a Kobe hater though. I like Kobe. He's one of the best to ever do it. I just think when it comes to the GOAT conversation, I think people get a little delusional.
I think you're a realist, and I appreciate that. I think that's needed in the basketball world, especially when debating that conversation. So I'm glad I asked.
His name will always be his name will always float around in there, though.
All right, so excellent episode again, Mike. I appreciate having you.
Appreciate it, man.
This was a hell of a time.
No problem, bro. Thank you guys for having me.